surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here once again Tuesday evening for some good old wrestling talk and some good old wrestling trivia. You know how we do. Thank you so much for everybody who is logging on to the chat room. Always have some good times there with some good trivia. Be sure to tweet at Crave Wrestling. And also, if you have any other thoughts, call in 347-884-8452. And thanks to everyone who has been supportive. This is the sixth month of Pancakes and Power Slams, and we're going strong. And thank you so much for all of those who continue to increase the support, and for those who follow my articles on Bleacher Report, for those who tweet at Crave Wrestling and like the Facebook page. Continue to spread the word about Pancakes and Power Slams. We will get into this week's news. Edge having neck surgery, cleaning up some previous surgeries and some just doing some maintenance, basically, as far as removing some pressure on his spine as well. NXT's Raquel Diaz, better known as Shaw Guerrero, legendary Guerrero daughter of Vicky, quits WWE. There's a few reasons floating around, but none is definitive as of yet. Kelly Kelly released as well. It just wasn't a compromise that the WWE was willing to basically adhere to. Based on the fact that she wanted more time off. She started, you know, in ECW as the exhibitionist in 2006. She was only 18 at that time. So this is, you know, basically her whole adulthood has been with the WWE just about. So wanted some time off to spend with her family and friends, and they granted it to her, I believe May is when she stopped wrestling full time. And then she still didn't want to. She was adjusted to the part-time schedule and didn't want to let it go. So they decided to release her. And then finally, there's some reports that the WWE is trying to offer Brock Lesnar less money next year. Right now his contract is around the $5 million mark, limited dates around 20 or so. Which is a steal, basically, and I'm sure that the WWE most likely don't want to make that similar kind of deal. He is still drawing. I knew he was going to draw, but it's, to me, still like I've said before in previous episodes, it's still kind of missed the bus, and I feel that way. Just because, you know, it's just not the same. It's just not the same Brock Lesnar. So feel free to come into the chat room, stay in there, and then we're going to have some fun. We'll open up with a question. How many tag team title partners has Kane teamed with? How many tag team title partners has Kane teamed with? And if you want to name the partners, feel free to do that as well. How many tag team title partners have Kane teamed with? Let's go on to Raw. First, start off with a CM Punk in-ring promo. Once again, the number is 347 884-8452. Feel free to stay in the chat room and answer the trivia questions. Tweet at Crave Wrestling if you have something to say that you feel that you want to be live on there as well. In-ring promo from CM Punk. Paul Heyman cuts a promo about AJ based on an edict of the board of directors. And AJ violated it and should be removed from position. Suggests he fills the position. Vicky Guerrero comes out and interrupts with Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler cuts a little promo, and then he suggests co-GMs of Raw, Guerrero and Heyman. AJ finally comes out and says she is on probation, was given an executive coach. Daniel Bryan comes out and says AJ's mental problems are from him dumping her. Then Kane comes out and cuts a promo. Then after a bunch of commotion of Kane and Daniel Bryan saying, I am the tag team champions, CM Punk saying best in the world, Ziggler saying I'm, you know, Mr. Money in the Bank, AJ books a match between the tag team champions against CM Punk and Dolph Ziggler. These opening segments to me have been a little bit too long, especially this one. This one got real cheesy, and not cheesy in a real funny way, cheesy in a more annoying way. So it just got it was just too much, and AJ, just the general manager, still is not working for me, and so we will see how that goes as far as AJ is concerned. I'm just really hoping that they, like, get to the point with this teasing AJ no longer being a general manager, because they need to fill that, they need to refill that position without AJ really soon, because it's just not working for her and her career. Next, we have Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara defeating Primo and Epico, a tag team tournament. Nice match by Mysterio and Sin Cara. I like their match that they have. It's a nice little way to, I guess, unify the team a little bit more. And so I'm cool with it. I like the team. I've liked the team since the beginning, and I think the writing is on the wall as far as what they want to do with it. What they want to do with Cara and Mysterio, which is eventually have a match between the two, which I would be a fan of. I think it would be a good idea. They were teasing Mysterio being the heel, and I hope that don't happen. If just two faces, it's fine. Neither one of them have to be the heel. Once again, for those who came in the chat room, the question right now is, how many tag team title partners has Kane teamed with? And feel free to name the tag team champions that he had as well. So next we have Antonio Cesaro defeating Brodus Clay. This was crazy to me. I mean, for all of that time of pushing Brodus Clay, he's been there since January, and if I'm not mistaken, he has only lost once, if I'm not mistaken, was against the Big Show. But wow, I mean, it was quick. And he ended up, Cesaro got the neutralizer. It seems like they're really trying to push Cesaro. I still don't know how I feel without being with Oksana. I think Oksana was a good fit for Cesaro. He doesn't have much charisma, and Oksana was the... She didn't have much charisma, too, but it was an added element of two people who didn't have much charisma. So people like that needs managers, and so I don't know exactly what they're doing with Oksana now. So we'll see, but I was – I mean, I don't know if they're going to start a U.S. title feud between Cesaro and Brodus Clay, so Brodus Clay had to take the fall in the beginning of the feud. But, wow, I was very, very shocked and surprised that Brodus Clay was a jobber. He lost fast, so... let's see here. We have the right answer. X-Pac, Undertaker, Big Show, RVD, Daniel Bryan, and the Hurricane. And yeah, so that's that is the tag team people that he is teamed with. The next. Next question is, what was The Undertaker's name when he debuted in the WWE? What was Undertaker's name when he debuted in the WWE? Next, we have a segment with AJ, the executive, and the executive coach, Christopher J. Stevenson, I believe the name was, and a Caitlin Backstage segment. To me, this was absolutely pointless. I have no idea. I don't know if they're trying to make AJ more of a heel because she was kind of snobby on Raw, and it's just really weird what they're trying to do. It just seems that they really don't have a conclusive ending of what they want to do with AJ, and it's getting a little boring to me, and just the whole Caitlyn thing was really weird to me, and I just wasn't a fan at all. So hopefully they do something with AJ, like I said, because this the executive coach thing was just an addition to something that was already boring. So. She was on a high when she did the whole Kane and CM Punk and Daniel Bryan when she was involved in that. And there were people, I mean, rightfully so, there were people who were trying to give her a chance when she was general manager. But to me, it was doomed from the beginning because that dumbed down, so to speak, her zany character. And it just really didn't. It was a bad idea. Next, we have Sheamus Big Show debate. Another absolutely pointless segment. The podium fell. It just seems like there was no type of. it seems like they were reading from a script, although they. Do read from a script, but it seems like they were like intermingling their lines and nobody knew when their cue was and they were talking over each other, and it just got really, really, really out of hand. Comment in the chat room that the podium falling made was laughable and Big Show handled it well. I'll agree with that. I guess that's one good thing about being a heel is that it's easier to heal things up than to face things up. If everybody out listening understands that, it's easy to play the heel a little bit more and get heel heat than face pops. Because if Sheamus would have done it, it would have been a little bit more awkward. But Show did play it well. But other than that, it was just. An incredibly pointless segment that if anything, you know, put that crap on SmackDown or the main event, which is debuting tomorrow. Do something like that. But on Raw, you can tell, and I think there were some numbers based on the past few weeks of Raw, it was the same... same amount of time for matches, but it's just filled with a bunch of more fluff. So I pretty much says it all as far as the quality of matches as far as the timing is concerned. It's not really expanding the in-ring action, so to speak, but it is. I mean, maybe a match or two more, but they're short matches, so it all equates to the same. Like, for instance, like I said, the surprisingly fast match between Cesaro and Brodus Clay that I was still shocked about. And then before we get to the dreaded Ryback versus Tensai controversy, once again, the trivia question out now. Feel free to call in, or those who are in the chat room, answer or tweet at Crave Wrestling. What was The Undertaker's name when he debuted in the WWE? What was The Undertaker's name when he debuted in the WWE? And if you want to one-up me, you can let me know where he debuted. What pay-per-view did he debut? The pay-per-view debut is an extension of the question, but what was his name when he debuted? And then we get to the Ryback versus Tensai. Now, let me start here. I didn't want this match to happen again. It was a good idea on SmackDown. It was a good idea on SmackDown. However, because like I wrote an article about Ryback's push, and I did say I did endorse the SmackDown match because, of course, Tensai is just a big jobber right now. But at the same time, if he's having this push of Goldberg proportions, he does need those big bodies to prove his power. For instance, like when Goldberg was having his push, he fought some big bodies. For instance, even Humoris was his first match. Mongo McMichael was another one. There's a bunch of different ones, but the one specifically that I remember as far as a big body was Reese, part of the Flock, in 1998. He was U.S. champ at the time, and he had a main event on Thunder with him and Reese from the Flock. So they're trying to figure out if he could jackhammer him, and he executed it really well. So that type of feel was good for this match to book Tensai against Ryback for that reason. But as we saw on Raw, let the controversy begin. Tried to get him in the shell-shocked finisher. He did it successfully on SmackDown, but he tried to get him in shell-shocked on Raw. And we all saw what happened. He tried to do it once, didn't work out. Tried to do it twice, still didn't work out. We heard some stupid chants. I mean, or some stupid shouts. And then he had to resort back to his Nexus, Skip Sheffield days, and do that running clothesline, which I think is an amazing move. Which I wouldn't be opposed to him keeping that move, because the shell shock is just too much. I mean, you lift them up, you do your little robotic march, you know, around half of the ring, and then the execution, you know, as far as running and, you know, the slam part is cool, but everything else around it is not a main event type of snappy, swift move. So, and then unfortunately, you deal with people like Tensai, who's just a big, just massive body, and worked on SmackDown, but didn't work on Raw. You know, feel free to call in or tweet or say on the chat line if you believe that Tensai kind of sandbagged Ryback. There was some stiffness from Ryback, and, you know, maybe he sandbagged him, maybe he didn't. It would make sense, though, if I would imagine that he didn't. I imagine that he didn't just for the fact that he needs... I'm sure he needs a paycheck, you know. But he was doing well in Japan as Giant Bernard, so he had to leave Japan, which he was doing well at, kind of revive his gimmick, have a ridiculous gimmick, and have a couple pushes, a couple quality wins, and then just tanked after that. So, yeah, we will see. We're going to have our Raw correspondent on here coming up here soon. But before that, Kane the Undertaker. Yes, that is correct. Survivor Series of 1990 is correct as well. All right, we're going to bring in Derek, our Raw correspondent. Let us know your thoughts this week, sir.
Well, my thoughts are okay. It wasn't a bad Raw. It's been worse, but it's been better. However, when Jim Ross was telling off CM Punk, that was probably the highlight of the night. Comparing CM Punk, his gimmick is so horrible. I've said that week after week on this show. He is a horrible gimmick at I'm the best there is, blah, blah, blah. It's not believable coming from CM Punk, so it's irrelevant. Also, Daniel Bryan and Kane, they are an awesome tag team. They are very good together. They should keep that up. I know they're going to break them up soon, and they'll probably have to end up fighting each other, but it's funny. It's entertaining. Daniel Bryan has come a long way from being knocked out in WrestleMania and losing in 18 seconds, but however, he's doing all right. But for the main point, I can't stand CM Punk. So what's your thoughts? I mean, I think he's probably one of the worst there is in Raw history, WWE history. I just do not like CM Punk at all. I don't like what he's doing. I want your thoughts. Lay it on me. See you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Derek. yeah, it seems like we get the weekly CM Punk bashing, and I like it. It's funny. I like CM Punk as far as his gimmick is concerned. He's a good wrestler. I have told people that it is getting a bit redundant. But I do think the respect gimmick is, I don't like it. I think that it's stuff like that would get stale fast. And it's kind of a rehash because Jericho was doing it as a heel versus CM Punk during the WrestleMania time. So, bit of a rehash. I don't like it. I don't like the whole respect thing. I like the alliance with Heyman. Heyman is gold. But other than that, you know, we'll see where this goes. I would rather see an alliance because, you know, just the whole respect thing is just not really cutting it for me. So thanks so much, Derek, for this week's Raw analysis. Go further here into Raw. Team Road Scholars backstage segment. Just not a fan of this. I'm not a fan of this tag team, and I can't stand the name. The name is just horrible to me. It is doing nothing for either of them because Damian Sandow was getting a really good push. Kind of, you know, just a steady build as a mid-card heel, and eventually, I mean, he had quality win after quality win, so, but this whole tag team thing is just really not working for him, so we'll see if the Road Scholars gets a failing grade soon, which I believe that will happen. I don't see them together for a while at all. So, Eve defeats Beth Phoenix. Who cares? I mean, yeah, Eve. This is horrible. I can go on and on about Eve. I do every week, and so Bottom line is, Beth Phoenix is the best diva in the WWE. She's leaving, and so they need somebody to step up to feud against Eve, because it looks like Caitlyn's coming back next week. Caitlyn's not ready yet to be that top diva. Eve is boring, she's annoying, and I'm not a fan at all. Next question is, who did Santino Marella beat to win his first Intercontinental title? Who did Santino Marella beat to win his first Intercontinental title? Next, we have AJ with the coach, Wade Barrett, back to a segment. Tell you what, man, the mention of SmackDown, we'll get into SmackDown, Beth Phoenix and Natalya, definitely. And, yes, Santino did beat Umaga, the late Umaga, for his first Intercontinental title, the Milan Miracle. They were in Italy, I believe, that day when Santino won. So got some good pops. It was a good way to debut Santino. I don't know about the Intercontinental title, so to speak. That's one of those things that, you know, you really have so much stock into, because I believe his name was I don't remember his Alexis. I don't remember his name in the developmentals, but he was like some brute MMA style, legit heel, you know. And it's totally different than where they brought him in as a face, and it's definitely now the comedic role. So, you know, but he has his place. Everybody can't be champion and everybody can't get a push at the same time. So, speaking of push, though, Wade Barrett seems like he's definitely on the rise to getting a good push. And the AJ, Wade Barrett telling AJ off, basically, and tell her she's not doing her job well. It was a good promo cut by Wade Barrett, and he's just got what it takes. I really hope that they don't mess it up. Really hope that they don't spoil Wade Barrett, because right now he's definitely being groomed to be the heel for the millennium. So I definitely am looking forward to see what they do with Wade Barrett. Next question is, what MMA fighter joined 3 Count in the WCW? Like I said, you know, these are for the diehard wrestling fans. This is what Pancakes and Power Slam is about. I'm just going to ask random questions, and it seems like we got some diehard fans in the chat room, because Tank Abbott is indeed the answer. Next, we'll go to Santino defeating Heath Slater by DQ. Santino attacked by Encore, which is Drew McIntyre, Jinder Mahal, and of course Heath Slater. I have mixed thoughts about this this stable. It is just one of the weirdest stables that I've ever seen. It's just, I don't think that it's really working yet. And the name Encore is horrible. I like the fact that they're giving Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal some TV time. I like the both of them as mid-card heels. But Encore, I mean, to me, it kind of takes away from, I wish that it was McIntyre, Jinder Mahal, and maybe one or two other heels, not Heath Slater. Maybe like a Curt Hawkins or something, somebody like that. But I don't like Heath Slater in that team. I like him. It seems like I like his gimmick about the whole one man band thing. But at the same time, it kind of it kind of dilutes the one-man band, because McIntyre and Mahal is more serious, and then Drew McIntyre does this little rocker guitar, you know, swing, and it's just kind of weird. So I don't think the concept of having Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal in a stable, I like, but I don't like Heath Slater. I like the fact that Mahal and McIntyre is in a stable because they have exposure now. They deserve it. I like them. They're, you know, they can be good heels. Just not quite. So we'll see where that goes. And Encore, horrible, horrible name. I mean, to me, I'm going to write an article soon about this on Bleacher Report, most likely. I'm going to mention them in some article, but I'm definitely going to talk about Encore, as in they spell it like Encore, but to me it's like an Encore, E-N-C-O-R-R-E, because the Core was one of the worst factions in the WWE, in the recent WWE history. It just, that faction bombed, and then named Core and spell it with two R's, and it was just over the top to me. And Ezekiel Jackson was the only, it was just, he seemed odd. I can see why they put him in the faction. He turned heel against Big Show, and I can see why they tried to do it, which wasn't terrible, but it just didn't work. The Core just was not well. I think even Wade Barrett made a mention about it being unsuccessful in a recent interview. Next, we got Sheamus defeating Damian Sandow. See, stuff like this is the reason why the Rhodes Scholars does not cut it for me, because Damian Sandow put on a really good match. He can prove that he's proven that he has the athletic ability to put on a good match, to put on a main event match. Honestly, I would rather have seen that lengthy match any day than the Big Show being in the main event feud again. Like I've said before, Big Show should be CM Punk's enforcer. He should be aligned with Heyman. He should not be in a main event feud. Please, please, please take the Big Show out. I would have rather seen that match in a paper. It was definitely a pay-per-view quality match. It was good. It was lengthy. Sheamus got the win. It was a good match. Then we got JR Appreciation Night. This was, now granted, McMahon and Triple H came out after the show, but for them to hype this up, this was totally a 180 from what I expected for it to happen. I was expecting, appearances. They were talking about Jack Swagger being in Oklahoma. He's from Oklahoma. They were talking about him possibly coming out. You know, even there were some rumblings about Austin, which I think would have been a good idea. But I know that he just had surgery recently, but and he's doing, you know, his reality show and all different types of things. But I'm sure that he would come to Oklahoma for the sake of you know, the appreciation night. If you're going to have an appreciation night, don't turn it into some type of extension to a feud. I mean, especially for JR. I mean, JR is JR, but at the same time, you know, knowing what the treatment that JR has gotten throughout his tenure in the WWE, honestly, and it's sad to say this, but honestly, it wasn't too far off from the treatment that he's gotten over the tenure of his career. He got fired twice, I believe, and then he got plugged into that horrible management role with the flavor of the week topic, the fake personas. So basically, there's five fake personas that I'm going to talk about, and JR was affiliated with two of those that I'm going to talk about later in the show. But that was just, that was horrible. And then the you know, just taking him off of the broadcasting team just because there was some feelings that he wasn't up to date, and you know, just the treatment that they've given JR is not okay for me. He's the best commentator that Raw's ever had, that WWE's ever had. So, you know, I'm a big JR fan. I've actually met him in person before, and he's a good guy. So, you know, interrupted by CM Punk is what happens, and then Punk forces JR to walk away shamefully. JR walks away, but Ryback comes out and brings JR back. He has a stare down with Punk, and Punk leaves. Crowds behind. Punk basically, he's just put JR to shame, kind of like what I've been saying as far. But it seems like what they're doing is, is having people like we saw with Foley and JR yesterday. There's some rumblings right now that John Cena will be okay for Hell in a Cell, and they're trying to make this part of the feud have the different legends come out and prove and try to convince CM Punk to say okay as far as giving John Cena a shot at the WWE title again, to prove that he's, you know, to really prove that he's the best in the world. You know, I can understand the they're trying to do what they can to be creative, but to me, they need some type of, this needs some type of injection. It really does, because it's starting to get similar to Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus. Now, it will never get that bad just because Cena and Punk is on a different plane, but it's starting to get a bit stale to me. And I really wish that they keep Cena off until Survivor Series, because like I wrote an article, he'll be recovering. It'll be a good time for him to recover. Hell in a Cell is a relatively throwaway pay-per-view, so they don't really need Cena for Hell in a Cell. So they might as well just say, okay, we'll build it up. You know, I'll be champ from Survivor Series to Survivor Series. I'm going to beat your record, things of that nature. And then, you know, they could have Cena beat Punk at Survivor Series. But Cena doesn't need to be at Hell in a Cell. It's not a necessity. So I really don't see why they have to, you know, see if they have to have him on the pay-per-view. They don't want it. It seems like Ryback's a plan B. We'll see where that goes. There's a lot of people who don't believe that Ryback's ready yet, but we'll see. But to me, I'm not always sold on Ryback as far as being the guy now, or the basically the number two babyface right now, as we've been seeing the past couple of weeks. But they did the ultimate test. JR, he, you know, was first forcing, CM Punk tried to force him to say the best in the world. He rejected it like Jerry Lawler did. And so eventually, after just, you know, just slandering JR, basically, he walks away. Ryback comes back out for the second time of the day, I mean of the night, and then basically has JR come back into the ring. JR stands behind Ryback, and then basically, you know, the crowd solidified him as the top guy just about, because the only thing he did was breathe hard and had some weird, mean stares on CM Punk and had the stare down, and he gets Feed Me More chance. So it's working. I mean, it's working as far as is him being a good insertion to replace John Cena. So we'll see if it's, you know, of course we won't see. At the end of the day, just like I've shared this with, before with someone I was speaking with about this feud, at the end of the day, WWE has pigeonholed themselves to let us know that it's CM Punk and John Cena are the two guys. Why have they pigeonholed themselves? Because The Rock is having a world title match at the Royal Rumble. So no matter what, you want that marketable feud, you want that money-drawing feud, and it's not going to be The Rock versus Ryback. Of course, it's not going to be Rock versus Ryback. So Ryback's a face, Rock's going to be a face. Ryback's not ready to make that heel turn because he hasn't really been a credible, I mean, it hasn't really established himself all that much to make a heel turn to be relevant. And so they've pigeonholed themselves. So at the end of the day, it's going to be either John Cena or CM Punk. So we're going to have to see this feud for the rest of the year. So we'll see what other innovative ideas, so to speak, they have with this feud. But we're going to be forced to see this feud for the rest of the year. The only thing I can think of is maybe Ryback winning it, winning the title in December, the TLC pay-per-view, and maybe losing it right before Royal Rumble. That's the only thing I can think of, but that's still too risky in the WWE's eyes. So we will see. I agree with the chat room comment. There's a really, really good chance that at that time Cena will be the world, will be the WWE champion, just so they can see Rock Cena too. One thing I do not want, this is one thing I don't want. I do not want I wouldn't mind Rock and Punk. I wouldn't mind that. But I really, really hope that John Cena does not win the Royal Rumble, because it seems like that it may go that route too. It may go Rock and Punk. Cena wins the Royal Rumble for the second time. Rock beats Punk at Royal Rumble to set up Rock Cena 2 at WrestleMania. I really, really, really hope that don't happen. So, Rock Cena 2 to me would be predictable. It would be really, really hard for me to believe that Cena would job to The Rock in two consecutive WrestleMania. So it seemed like it would be a little bit more predictable this time. Alberto Del Rio defeats Kofi Kingston. This guy is just lost in space. Alberto Del Rio has no direction now. I'm really glad he's away from the World Heavyweight Championship picture, but he has absolutely no direction. And to me, they need a babyface mid-card champion. Right now, Cesaro has the U.S. title. Miz has the Intercontinental title. They need a babyface mid-card champion. Because Del Rio, to me, always, I've said this for a while, I was a big fan of Del Rio, and his toward the beginning of his tenure and around his Royal Rumble win, I was happy about that. But he just, I think what really made him go south was his WrestleMania loss to Edge at WrestleMania 27. That to me really made his career go south, because he was like on a big old rise and won the Royal Rumble, the only 40-man Royal Rumble, won, you know, and then he lost to Edge. He won the Money in the Bank, but at the same time, it just wasn't the same. The very fact that you win the Royal Rumble and lose, and then win the Money in the Bank, and still have relatively forgettable title runs, is the fact that you're not really a top guy in the WWE. In Mexico, he was a star. But you're not Dust Caras anymore. So you are Alberto Del Rio, or you're not Dust Caras Jr. Excuse me. Alberto Del Rio is not as popular as Dust Caras Jr. So he's a mid-card guy. He's not a top guy. He's an upper mid-carder guy. So they just need to admit that he's that guy and have some good mid-card feuds with him, because he's I think he's needed in the WWE. He is a good heel, but as a top guy, not quite. Then we see AJ, executive coach backstage segment. Who cares? She snaps on the coach. Just pointless. Just pointless. No need to even have. There was no need to do it at all. I mean, we saw like three segments of it, and the first one was terrible. So that was just a waste of time. Team Hell No defeats Punk and Ziggler. Good match, good main event. AJ was a special referee, and it was good. At the end of the day, it was a good match, and Ziggler walks out on Punk, and it was a good way to have. I'm surprised that Punk actually took the fall. I mean, he actually jobbed, and he's the WWE champion, but. You know, it was a good move. It was a good way to really put some stock behind Kane and Daniel Bryan by beating Mr. Money in the Bank and the WWE champion. And the way that they did it was good too, by Ziggler walking out and Punk basically, you know, being by himself, and so he really didn't have much of a choice but to fend for himself, and of course he's going to lose to the tag team champions that way. So it was cool. And then at the end, we get more "I am the tag team champions," which has been very catchy as of late. Next question that we have here: who is the only two-time Ring of Honor champion? Who was the only two-time Ring of Honor champion? Yep, I threw a Ring of Honor champ. I threw a Ring of Honor question in there. Next, we'll go to SmackDown. We'll recap SmackDown. Big Show in-ring promo interrupted by Randy Orton. Orton cuts a promo. Alberto Del Rio interrupts, gets RKO'd as he comes in the ring. Antonio Cesaro defeats Santino Marella again. I like Santino's headbutt, though. I like Santino's, I call it the Santino salute. When he does the arm drag or the hip toss, excuse me, when he does the hip toss and then does it from the ropes, it's okay. But he actually tried to do it, you know, he was scared and he just kind of, you know, fell out of, you know, what he missed. And I liked it. It was a lot better than the Cobra. Beth Phoenix defeats Natalya. Good match. It was mentioned in the chat room. Good match by those two. That was probably the match of the year as far as the Divas are concerned. Eve comes out and suspends Phoenix. Booker T and Teddy Long backstage segment. Booker reverses the decision. Eve tries to cause friction between Booker and Long. Wade Barrett defeats Zack Ryder. Barrett's music is actually growing on me now. I didn't like... I had enough, End of Days, I think it was called. I liked that for him. And then the I Don't Care What You Think of Me, like the first version of it, when he had, like, earlier this year and came out at the Elimination Chamber, that was just horrible. But this version is growing on me more than... way more than the other one did, so I think I'll eventually feel that it is a fit for Barrett. Once again, the question is: who is the only two-time Ring of Honor World Champion? Dolph Ziggler and we saw Miz TV special guest Sheamus. Dolph Ziggler and Vicky interrupts, cuts a promo. Sheamus fights off Miz and Ziggler. You know, another bombed Miz TV segment. I don't know if they're really going to do anything with that, other than the fact that you know, it's a I guess it's an avenue for to build feuds or to extend feuds, just like Piper's Pit and all the other talk interview shows were. Tag team tournament: Rose and Ziggler defeats the Usos. Rhodes Scholars defeats the Usos. Ryback defeats Tensai. This was actually the good match that Shell Shocked actually worked. Orton attacked by Alberto Del Rio backstage in the hallway. Alberto Del Rio comes out while Big Show in ring to name himself as a replacement. Attacked by Orton on stage, and Orton walks to ring. I think that was a good way to... And then Big Show defeats Orton, becomes the number one contender for the World Heavyweight title. Although I'm not a fan of Show being in the world, the main event anything right now, I guess the fact that they are billing it as the first match between Sheamus and Show causes some type of intrigue. I don't have much, but I still don't believe Show should be involved. But, you know, seeing if he could bro-kick Show, I guess would... work. Not, you know, I would prefer it not to be for in the main event, but I guess it's what they have right now. And it's a good way to send off Orton, too. He's filming for 12 rounds reloaded. So being injured, going into the match and then kicking out of one of the choke slams and having two choke slams to beat him, you know, it really didn't lose any steam for Orton, so it was a good way to book that. And then he gets WMD'd post-match, and Show says, I guess I'll be seeing you at Hell in a Cell. So, no tweets. Nobody got the tweet or the chat room. The answer to that looks like I might be stumping some people with the ROH, so I might have some more ROH questions to maybe stump some more, because it seems like we've got some good wrestling fans. The answer to that, the only two-time ROH champion, is indeed Austin Aries. He is the only two-time ROH champion. Speaking of Austin Aries, we'll go to Impact Wrestling. Before that, I'm going to throw out another question here. Who managed Akeem? Who managed Akeem in the WWE. Impact Wrestling. Hulk Hogan in-ring promo mentions Devon's negotiation problems. He books Storm and Rude street fight at Bound for Glory with King Mo, a special enforcer. We'll get to that after our recap here. Sting returns. Both agree to go to Aces and Nate's clubhouse. Christopher Daniels defeats Guerrero and Angle in a triple threat match. Hogan backstage with TV title contenders. This is a Championship Thursday. They're branching off part of the gut check. This usually was a part of the gut check night. The open fight night, and they're branching it off to its own specific night, starting as Championship Thursday now. I think Hogan actually mentioned that as well. Hogan backstage with TV title contenders. Magnus eliminated initially. Brooke and Tara backstage segment. Tara defeats ODB. Officially becomes number one contender. Gut check discussion. Bully Ray backstage segment. Hulk Hogan eliminates Garrett Bischoff. Bobby Roode and Austin Aries backstage segment. And then Samoa Joe defeats Mr. Anderson to become the new TV champ. Ace of the Nates abducts Hogan and Sting, puts them in van and leaves. Evan Markopoulos denied contract. Aces and Nates, Hogan and Sting segment. Hogan agrees to choose two people versus them at Bound for Glory. They're trying to book themselves. I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to see Hogan in a ring again. Please do not put Hogan in a ring again. That would just be horrible. I'm a big Sting fan. Sting's my all-time favorite wrestler, but Hogan is, yeah, he's not physically, yeah. Especially, I think it was it 2010, Bound for Glory, or it might have been last year, that he actually competed against Sting in the match at Bound for Glory, and he made his face turn again. And, oh, man, it was brutal. Matter of fact, I almost think it was, it was last year, because 2010 is when he turned heel, the 10-10-10, and, it was brutal last year with Hogan and Sting's match. And then he talks to the ringleader, has back towards them, says Joseph Park will be released after the match at Bound for Glory. Hardy and Aries defeats Bobby Roode and Bully Ray. Hogan and Sting released by Aces and Eights and Loading Dock. So it was a good Impact Wrestling episode to build the Aces and Eights feud more. I like the Aces and Eights feud, but I don't know. It's sometimes they make that decision to overextend things, and I think this should have been, I think the identity behind, even if they wanted to keep the Aces and Eights, I think the person behind Aces and Eights, and I keep saying this, should have been debuted in No Surrender. Now, if they want to keep the Aces and Eights, they have the stipulation that right now that they made on Championship Thursday that they'll have full access if they win, and if they lose, I believe they have to leave. So I wouldn't have made it that conclusive. I really wouldn't have done that. I would have tweaked that a little bit more to have Ace and Ace lose at Bound for Glory, but still had an opportunity to come back. But they should have revealed. I was hoping that they would have even revealed who was behind it then, but it seems like they'll probably do it. They're probably saving that for Bound for Glory. They did that 2 years ago, and the payoff was not good. The whole 10-10-10 thing, Jeff Hardy ended up being behind it. He just wasn't really a good heel. It didn't last long, and just the payoff just wasn't good at all. Jeff Jarrett turned heel that night too. Bischoff and Hogan turned heel, and Jeff Hardy turned heel that night. It was just really weird. Wasn't a good payoff, so. Good to see Samoa Joe as the new TV champ. He is the Grand Slam champion now. He's TV champ, former X Division champ, former tag team champ, and former world champion. So good deal with that. I actually want Magnus to be the guy as far as the TV title. He has a ton of potential. He's only 25, and I like Magnus. So hopefully they Samoa Joe's been a tweener for so long, but he has kind of feud with Magnus recently, so hopefully they relive or revive that feud between Magnus and Samoa Joe. The triple threat match between Daniels, Guerrero, and Angle, I was expecting a little bit more just because they're three of the best wrestlers in TNA. But it was just a weird match with a lot of miscues, so wasn't as big of a fan as that as I wanted it to be. So decent, overall decent pay-per-view, decent Impact Wrestling show. Looks like stumping with that question as well as far as managing Akeem. The answer to that is Slick, the Doctor of Style Slick. This question should be a little bit easier. Who is the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion? Who was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion? Quickly, we'll go to ROH before the flavor of the week here. Just a recap of the Death Before Dishonor 10 iPay-per-view. That's a few weeks ago. Scum defeats Rhett Titus and tag team title finals, the tournament finals, to become the world tag team champions. Jay Lethal defeats Homicide. We've seen a more vicious face side of Jay Lethal. I like it. Lethal is my favorite wrestler in ROH. He's one of my favorites in TNA. Definitely good to see more of a killer instinct with Jay Lethal. I think it's a good idea. Of course, we see a lot of ROH promotions and a bunch of interviews and recaps and things like that. And then the TV title match was Adam Cole and Mike Mondo, and Adam Cole defeating Mike Mondo by submission. Matt Hardy appearance, that was really interesting. He wrestled for ROH years and years ago, and interesting to see him there as well. So I'm going to take this call here. Let us know what city you're from, your name, and your thoughts. Go right ahead.
I am from Charlotte, North Carolina. This is the Nature Boy. And do you think, that you can do professional wrestling on Blog Talk better than me? Do you? Speak up. Speak up right now. Where is Croix? Where is McMahon? Where is Shawn Michaels? Where are they? I'm looking for them right now. You claim wrestling? I claim to kick your ass.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a Ric Flair parody there. You never know what you're going to get on Pancakes and Power Slams. There you go. That was a pretty good Ric Flair persona there. Next time, Flair, watch your mouth. So I'll be sure to let you know the next time you call. That was funny, though. So whoever the Ric Flair persona is, you have made this episode very memorable. So good job with the and trust me, everybody who's listening out there, that was not scripted. It was funny. It was not scripted, and that was a pretty funny Ric Flair persona there. All right, the flavor of the week we will get to the fake personas. We will get to the first person is the fake Sting, which was for those who don't remember, it was Cobra. Cobra was the fake Sting, and the NWO time, people were thinking that it was the real Sting, and he was against WCW, kind of turned on WCW, and then War Games pay-per-view came out, the real Sting, and, you know, it was a stare-down between the real Sting and the fake Sting. It was pretty cool, but Cobra did a good job. He looked a lot like Sting. And they did a good job booking him to be that Sting. Fake Kane was Festus. He actually beat the real Kane at a pay-per-view, which is really weird. But they had it was kind of weird how they had the fake Kane come out. It didn't really necessarily look like Kane. They share the same size and height, but at the same time, their body type just wasn't the same. So it was just an odd feud that they had. Fake Razor Ramon and fake Diesel. That's the two people that I wanted to mention. during the WCW WWE rivalry. Jim Ross, they he kind of played a heel manager. It was one of the times that he was, like, fired and came back. And when Razor Ramon and when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash defected to the WCW, basically the Raw said that Diesel and Razor Ramon was going to be there that night. And so was this, there was some suspense in the beginning. And then he introduced Diesel and Razor Ramon, and they were obviously fake. And although Razor Ramon is not, although the fake Razor Ramon is not really known as far as any other gimmick, we all know that, well, some of us know that the fake Diesel was actually Isaac Income DDS, who in turn happens to be Kane. So, interesting little trivia there. And then finally, the fake Undertaker. For those who don't know, 1994, I believe it was, the Undertaker was sent off in a casket match. I believe he lost against Yokozuna in 94. It was like 10 other wrestlers, around 10 other wrestlers that assisted Yokozuna in defeating The Undertaker and at the Royal Rumble. And then basically, interesting little tidbit here in the chat room. It says the fake Diesel and Razor gimmick netted Nash and Hall a big chunk of extra money from WCW. Nice little tidbit there. Thanks, thanks chat room for bringing that out. Definitely a nice little fun fact there. Fake Undertaker 94, and then they Ted DiBiase basically said that he bought out. He bought the Undertaker, and we saw the Undertaker come out, the fake Undertaker come out, and then eventually Paul Bearer said that he, you know, the real Undertaker is coming at SummerSlam, and they had the Undertaker versus Undertaker match at SummerSlam. And for those who don't know who fake Undertaker was, it was Primetime Brian Lee, who was also known as, in ECW, he was known as Primetime Brian Lee, but he was also one of the disciples of Apocalypse. He was definitely chains from the disciples of Apocalypse. So, interesting little tidbit there about fake personas. So, thank you so much for viewing. This is a very fun show, as we have all the time. Thanks for all the tweets. Continue to tweet at Crave Wrestling. And if a tweet next week is worthy to be said, we'll say it live on air. And thank you for all of the trivia, the fun trivia that we have every week. Let's see here, Honky Tonk Man was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion. That was indeed correct. So, tweet at Crave Wrestling. Go to Facebook and like Crave Wrestling. So, kudos to the fake Ric Flair. Speaking of fake personas, we had a fake Ric Flair come on the line today. Once again, like I said, that was not scripted, but it was incredibly funny. A good Ric Flair voice there. So yeah, just next time that happens, feel free to persona, but just you know, watch the this is a family show, so be sure to watch that. But thanks for supporting every week. I you know, Crave Wrestling definitely is appreciative of the support. The numbers are growing as far as listening to the show. Is growing exponentially, and thank you so much. So check out my articles on Bleacher Report, Chris Featherstone, articles on Bleacher Report. Just wrote an article about if Ryback's if Raw, what Raw did with Ryback, if it solidifies him as a top guy, if it's convincing to people now. So had a bunch of good comments about that, and just stay tuned. We'll be here next week. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week's show. Thank you so much, and until then, enjoy your wrestling this week, and God bless. Goodbye.